Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Welcome to the AEW Match Guide podcast, where we deep dive into the best matches in AEW history. Brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network and your host, Sam Brown.
Yes, hello and welcome to the AEW Match Guide podcast. I'm your host, Sam Brown. Thanks for joining me. Every week, alongside a special guest, I take an in-depth look at one of the best matches in AEW history, taken from the definitive AEW Match Guide, as ranked by over 30 wrestling commentators from around the internet wrestling community. If you enjoy the show today, you can subscribe and rate it on the podcast app of your choice. My guest today is a podcaster with a proclivity for positivity, the host of All About All Elite here on Social Suplex, Floyd Johnson Jr. And we are looking at FTR versus the Young Bucks from Full Gear 2020. How are you going today, Floyd?
I am doing well. When you called or when you messaged me and asked me what match I wanted to do on this list, I almost jumped out of my chair because this was the match. This is probably my favorite match. It's either this or Cody versus Dustin in AEW history. I happened to have the fortunate of being live at this match, and it was everything that I wanted it to be, everything that I've been dreaming for it to be over the last 4 years, everything that I never thought I would get, because I honestly never thought this match would happen.
Yeah, it was steaming hot in many, many ways that we'll get into later in the match. so before we get into the actual match, Floyd, if you're joining us here on the Social Suplex, chances are you know this because Floyd is the Mr. AEW on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. But for the people, what is your history with AEW, Floyd? How did you discover this promotion?
Okay, so I'm a big Cody fan. So when he left the WWE and shortly after, 6 months to a year after, joined the Bullet Club, I started watching Being the Elite, and I went to ROH shows, and then I was at All In. So All In is considered the pilot for AEW, and yep. I was in All In, and I saw, of course, my boy Cody win the NWA title, and still one of the loudest pops I ever heard as soon as they hit the three on Nick Aldis.
Beautiful match.
It was a beautiful match. And it was just like, as far as from beginning to end, it was one of the livest, most energetic crowds I'd ever been in. And I never thought I would experience it again. And I've experienced it quite a few more times after that. So it's a feeling like I used to get at just a random Raw when I was in high school, and Raw would come through Oklahoma City and they would have to cut off traffic because so many people were going, and it was just this energy and everything was over. I hadn't felt what I felt at All in 10, 15 years, at least probably closer to 20. So when I felt that, I was like, I need this in my veins. And Jeremy and Josh looked for someone to cover AEW, and I was like, absolutely, I'll cover AEW. And I have been at all the pay-per-views except one.
Yeah, and you're a lucky man, Floyd.
and that was the one they didn't let anyone in.
And as the good people know, and from my accent, I haven't had a chance to go see AEW because I happen to live across the other side of the ocean to where AEW has been so far. But I totally agree with your sentiment there. I feel like for so many of us, who became maybe a little bit jaded towards wrestling at different points. AEW sort of gives you that feeling of being a child where you're like so excited to know what happens and you just can't wait. I know for myself, like Dynamite happens when I'm working during the day, so I have to dodge spoilers during the day and in the afternoon until I get my little girl down, and then I sit down and watch Dynamite, and I'm always, you know, on the edge of my seat, just to, I can't wait to see what happens, just with that sort of childlike wonder. And that, I think that's been the magic for AEW, bringing so many hardcore fans back to that pure fandom, as opposed to, you know, maybe you don't care so much if you get spoiled and you sort of take everything a bit cynically. Whereas, I don't know, for myself at least, AEW is just something I can just fully invest in and fully mark out for, you know, when you have a match like this. You know, this has been a match that you dreamed of for years and years, and you got it. And I imagine, you know, we're going to hear about today how meaningful it was for you.
Absolutely. I've kind of went over kind of what I'm going to say so I could kind of get the choking up and the tears out of my voice, because it's literally one of my favorite matches ever between two of my favorite teams, like, ever.
Well, look, to introduce the actual match itself, as I said before, it's FTR versus the Young Bucks. Just to get into some of the flowers that it got at the time, Dave Meltzer ranked it 5.25 stars. Beat the 5-star ranking. Grapple, the notorious, the hard markers at Grapple, it's 4.41 currently. Cage match, it's in Rare Air, it's 9.16. And in the definitive AEW match guide, it ranked in at 9th. So we've been over why you chose this match, but I wanted to get into the build, because this match, I feel like, is about the build as much as it is about the actual match itself, because it was building forever. It started in like 2016 on social media with these two teams going back and forth. Of course, on BTE, we had the FTR, the Fuck the Revival chant, and then the FTRR, Do You Get It moment. In 2018, Dash Harwood at the time, now Dax, he posted on Twitter, "One day we'll wrestle the Young Bucks and everyone will rejoice. Remember this tweet." And beyond that, just countless debates, countless back and forths. Floyd, I know for you personally, you were right at the start of it in 2016. Can you just tell us this story that you were telling me beforehand about being in line and hearing the Revival sort of really cut one on the Young Bucks?
So, yeah, I'm at WrestleMania 32 standing in line for the Revival, and, you know, got my little fanny pack on. I'm very excited, and we get up there. And this dude's wearing a Young Bucks shirt.
That's proper wrestler, like, by the way, wearing a fanny pack to a wrestling convention.
Absolutely. Actually, that fanny pack that I wore is actually now signed by FTR.
They would have loved that.
Yes, they did. They did love it. They was like, yeah, love the fanny pack. Yeah, so when that happened, he was wearing a Young Bucks shirt. They started going off about the scrawny little guys called the Young Bucks. You know, they never make it back in the day, because, of course, their Revival, and that was their whole gimmick, was being, you know, wrestlers from back in the day. And he was like, you know, they never make it, those boys. And then they tried to get me into it, and I was like, yeah, they don't know. I'm like, I wasn't a big Bucks fan at this time, so I'm like, oh, they don't know. Those little dudes couldn't do anything. All they could do was lace up your shoes and carry your gear. And yeah, we just got into it. It was like, pretty much until recently, it was like the longest interaction I had in there, and it was making fun of the Young Bucks. So it really was this kind of, you know, moment, because from that moment I was like, okay, I need this match to happen. Yep. And this is before I ever met the Young Bucks. I actually met the Young Bucks later that year, like a few months later. And of course,
did you tell them that the Revival cut one on them?
I told them exactly what happened. Like, the Revival cut one on them. And he's like, man, we really love those guys. Those are really nice guys. Hopefully we get to work with them one day.
Well, the just Bucks were probably like, I like these guys, because one day we're going to make a lot of money with them.
Yes, like the best baby face, like, cut promo ever. It was like they didn't say one bad thing about the FTR. And then a little few months later, Cody started with the F the Revival thing, and I was like, I can't do that. You know, I can't say that.
I'll roll with you, Cody.
I can't roll with you. I mean, I'd follow you in the war, sir, but I can't diss the Revival. Those are my boys. Yeah.
And I mean, 2016 was when the Revival really made their name. They were on an absolute hot streak. They had the matches with America, Enzo and Cass, they had fantastic matches with them. absolutely one of the hottest crowds, WWE crowds I've ever seen. The NXT TakeOver Dallas when they were against American Alpha. And then, of course, the incredible series with DIY. And, you know, we all know the history of the Young Bucks. And I think the two of these, the reason that they made such a, it was such a great rivalry is it pitched the old school versus the new school, this clash of styles, and then also a clash of fan bases. You had, you know, the WWE NXT guys, you had the more at the time Ring of Honor, Indie, New Japan following that the Young Bucks had. There was just so much volatility around then. And of course, I feel like this match got even more hyped as the Revival sort of had to pull back when they got onto the main roster and weren't necessarily able to live to the potential that they wanted to. And you could see glimpses of it every now and again. And every now and again, you'd hear a report from a house show of them just absolutely tearing up the ring with a Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler and just absolutely blowing the roof off the house, but never actually getting to see it. And then, of course, you know, AEW happens and the Young Bucks say, we want to make tag team, this a tag team wrestling destination. So, of course, you know, you've got lots of tag teams joining, Lucha Bros, Proud and Powerful, SCU, of course, the Young Bucks as EVPs. But the whole time you're going, man, when are we going to get the Revival into the mix here? Did you always think that this match would happen?
No, I absolutely did not think it would happen. FTR was in WWE. They had been NXT champions, SmackDown champions, Raw champions. They had been being used. And yeah, I thought they were going to be there forever. I thought they were going to retire in the WWE system. And I don't know if they will admit it, but they're getting booked at the end towards that last 2 years. They're getting booked terribly, just terribly in WWE, or not used at all. And they're killing it on house shows. Fans are telling them, oh, how great they are on house shows. But who's winning? Who's getting the five-star tag team matches? Who's on the getting the number one on Wrestling Observer?
Who's having to do Uzi Hot?
Yeah, PWI. And it's like, it's the Young Bucks. And they're killing it because they're allowed to perform. They're allowed to do what they do really, really well. And yeah, they're doing Uzi Hot and they're telling jokes and they sent out the gear, you know, that WWE wanted them to send out, you know, and they're like, oh, we're telling stories. And FTR at their core are just professional wrestlers and they just want to tell the wrestling, the physical wrestling in the ring. They don't mind cutting promos. They don't mind doing that, but they're a fan of 80s wrestling, 80s tag team wrestling. That's what professional wrestling is to them. And yeah, and the WWE wasn't aligning with their values.
Yep. And eventually, of course, as we know, they managed to finally get the release that they were seeking, that they were after. And they turned up in AEW, looking at the two teams, sort of where they were positioned in AEW, because it factors into the match itself. In AEW, the Bucks initially, even though they were one of the creators of the company, they didn't do so well early on as a team. You know, they lost the first round of the championship tournament in one of the very first Dynamites. They got beaten by Hangman and Kenny at the pay-per-view, and they finally managed to get into the number one contenders position. And they also missed out on a chance for a rematch with Hangman and Kenny at All Out. And by contrast, FTR, they arrived after Double or Nothing, immediately faced off with the Elite. They had, of course, a number of multi-man matches that featured the Bucks and Kenny, but they were immediately successful by contrast. They were unbeaten for a good while, and they slowly managed to use Hangman to sort of splinter the Elite. And used it to get under the Bucks' skin, because they ultimately knew that Hangman and Kenny had the belts and the Bucks were their biggest competition, and they singled those two teams out. The way they wrestle is by cutting off the ring and breaking up the team that way, and that's the way they approach these guys, by using Hangman to splinter the Elite, to turn Kenny Omega on his tag team partner, and just really sow seeds of animosity in there. And eventually it paid off with Hangman Page helping them beat the Bucks in the gauntlet match to determine the number one contender to face them at All Out. They won it All Out. FTR then went into doing the Brush with Greatness. They were still unbeaten, just rolling through tag teams. Floyd, what did you think of the initial build-up of these two teams and the positioning on the roster, with the Bucks and not being successful, whereas FTR coming in just red hot and slicing through the division like a knife through butter?
You know what? I was confused, because at the time when AEW first started, to me, there were clear one and two tag teams. So I figured when they did the tag team tournament, it would end with the Young Bucks and the Lucha Bros wrestling for the tag titles. They had already done it at Double or Nothing, and they had the match again at All Out. Both amazing matches. So I figured you're starting your company, you're starting your tag team division, you're launching your tag team titles. It's going to be the Young Bucks versus the Lucha Bros. Then we get the Young Bucks losing the first round to Private Party. I'm like, okay. All right, well, this is setting up for something bigger. The Lucha Bros are going to win. The Lucha Bros then lose in the finals. Okay. Well, one of them is going to beat Scorpio Sky and Zarian for the title. Oh, okay. Now Kenny and Hangman are the champions. Okay. Very confused, because this is you got like the best tag team division in the world, and you put a makeshift tag team as your tag team title holders. I'm always going to fundamentally have a problem with that. To me, makeshift tag teams are like a heavyweight wrestling an X division star. You know what I mean? It's just, that's not where you belong. So they
get with that point, I do kind of tend to agree with you there. It can work, particularly when it's done to, you know, enhance a story or a feud, which is what they did with this. I think this worked, but that was largely off the back of their work. But fundamentally, it was a head scratcher at the time. You know, for every really good team, like maybe a Jericho or Owen Hart and Yokozuna, you've got, you know, 100 MVPs and Mark Henrys or The Miz and Big Shows, where it's just like, what are we doing here? Why are we doing this?
Yes. And this one worked. It worked exceptionally well. Probably had, I think it had the highest Hangman and Kenny versus the Young Bucks is the highest rated match in AEW history, correct?
Yeah, well, in the match guide that we did, it was number one. Won countless match of the year polls.
We haven't covered it here,
but we will one day.
They didn't even wrestle. They wouldn't even tag for a year, and they were in like all the tag team of the year talk. So it worked immensely well. I mean, I can't, you know, like hindsight being 2020. Yeah, there was. Why would you question that? These two are amazing wrestlers.
But no, your point is that fundamentally, as a concept, it's generally something you don't want to be doing a whole lot of.
So, yeah, and they held the belts, you know, for a while. I think they had, you know, the longest reign until recently. And then at All Out, Hangman and Kenny, they tagged and lost to FTR. Again, I was there. Very happy to be there for that event. And it was just like, okay, in my mind, a real tag team has the belt. I'm happy. This is what AEW meant when they said they were meaning the greatest tag team in the division, and they started building to the Young Bucks. And I was like, yeah, this is right. This is right. This is right. They're finally on the right path. You're going to have tag team number one versus tag team number two. Up until then, when FTR won the titles, not just FTR, it could have been any established tag team. But once they turned the tag team titles, I felt like the tag team division was back to being what it's supposed to be.
And that was sort of FTR's take on it as well. They were saying, you know, we're going to cut out the drama. You know, you're not going to see us turning on one another. You're not going to see all this drama with us. We're just going to do, you know, these one after the other championship matches with their, you know, a brush with greatness thing, 20 minutes. Come in, see if you can knock us off. And no one could. That was sort of the story that they were telling as well, was that, you know, we're a team. We're not two individuals, so we don't have distractions. We're just about the wrestling, the physicality of it. And, you know, in the actual build-up, them being on a hot streak and the Young Bucks sort of struggling, I think was a really interesting contrast. And then, of course, that led to the Bucks sort of having a coming to Jesus moment almost, deciding, you know, getting a little bit more pissed off, a little bit more aggressive, thinking they needed to go back to their more abrasive style that had worked for them, you know, back in 2016 when this was all kicking off, rather than, you know, these more just nice guys and, you know, maybe lovely EVPs to work with, but not necessarily as successful as they could have been in the ring. And that's storyline wise, of course, I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, the tag team division in AEW needs the Young Bucks. It was like they did a great job of a building anticipation. Their fandom is crazy and exciting and very passionate. One of my friends, Owen Reynoldson, giving them a shout out on here, the biggest Young Bucks fan I know, follows them all around the country. And it's just like, it's time. You know, it's like shit or get off the pot. It's time to be champions, you know. And so even when they put the stipulation that they would never challenge for the tag belts again, it was just like, yes, this is what we want. Put yourself in the corner. Build the desperation.
With that, I was going to actually ask you, because you're such a big Cody fan, I always thought that, and with the Bucks being a little bit more pissy in this and with their eventual direction of, you know, just becoming these absolutely insufferable pricks known, I was going to say, did you think that was at all a shot at what Cody did the year before, saying that if he loses, he'll never go for the championship again? I always thought it was never stated by the commentators or, you know, expanded on by them, but I always thought like the symmetry in that was a bit funny and I don't know. It felt like a bit of a backhander to him.
I don't remember it clearly, so I could be embellishing this in my brain. But I believe when they announced it, Nick Jackson kind of made a face and kind of like almost mockingly said, "We'll never challenge for the belt again." Like it was towards Cody, even though they were faces at the time. I still think there was a mocking tone to it, and they did it at the same pay-per-view that he did it at.
Yeah.
And it was just and they kind of threw it on at the end, this unnecessarily stipulation. I will go on record as I'm saying the Cody stipulation is the dumbest stipulation ever in wrestling to me. I hate it. I absolutely hated it when he said it. When he lost, I thought it was building up to him winning. He lost. And I was like, I still hate it to this day. I hate the stipulation. I don't think there's a reason ever to take, like, other than like injury, to take someone out of a system. Like, if he had challenged 3 or 4 times for the tag belts like the Young Bucks did, and he was like, this is my 4th chance, you know, I'll never challenge for it again if I lose. Cool. I can understand it. But he was doing it on his first challenge. I'm not going to go off on a long tangent. I hate the stipulation.
Little bit of behind the scenes. A lot of these are a bit pre-recorded, so we're sort of recording a few before we kick things off here. And one of the other matches that I've done is Cody versus Jericho with my friend Miz Fan. So you'll have to listen into that one, Floyd. And we do get into that stipulation there as well. We absolutely need to get into this actual match though.
I'm ready. Whenever
you are. Let's get started. We've taken as long as the Young Bucks and FTR did to finally lock horns with a match. So they kick things off with a fantastic big match promo talking about sort of the legacy defining stakes of this match. And showing how personal things had gotten with these two over the months leading up to this match. Bucks come out, big match, Lakers colors, purple and yellow. FTR coming out, looking hot and sweaty. Great Bomber jackets proclaiming them the greatest tag teams of all time. And they're in green and white for the Celtics, apparently. You'll have to enlighten me. Lakers-Celtics, okay. That's a thing, okay. Is it?
Yes, Lakers and Celtics was a big rivalry in the 80s, and I actually took some notes to add to this. Young Bucks come out in their Lakers and Spider jerseys. Lakers in the 80s were the Showtime, flashy teams, big passes. Of course, the Young Bucks are also from California.
Yeah, I knew that much. Yeah.
So that leads into it. They wear the pants and the tassels. Everything about them is flashy, just like the Lakers.
That's brilliant. I did not know that. I'm so glad you pointed that out, because that's a fantastic story beat, right? It's perfect symmetry. Yes. The Celtics, I don't know much. All I know is Michael Jordan was like the Showtime guy for that side of the conference, or however it works in the NBA. The Celtics, are they like hardworking, working class? I know they're from Boston, so they're
blue collar town. They're the classic franchise. 17 NBA titles. They won like 9 championships in a row. They're more technically, and they play more fundamental basketball. They're the franchise of Bill Russell and Larry Bird. Green tights and boots, you know, FTR's wearing just, you know, green tights and boots, very classic wrestling, with all they have on the back is GTOAT on the back.
Greatest tag team of all time.
Yeah, so it's like even their entrances were contrasting. Young Bucks come out with the Bucks and everything just splashy, and just in general, FTR, we just have our music. Walk down to the ring, they do their 5, everything's about business. They contrast it the whole way to the ring.
Yeah, brilliant. I'm so glad you pointed that out, Floyd. Of course, Tully was banned from ringside, so he gets immediately sent to the back. Limited seating as we know at that point, but still a lot of noise going into it. And early on in the match, both teams are just sort of showing off. You know, Bucks trying to unload on strikes and double teams, FTR trying to ground the faster and more agile team down. That's, you know, classics between those two. Bucks are the first team to hit a big sequence of offense. They hit double hurricanranas, sending FTR to the outside. Really great back and forth here. Immediately sets up the story of the match where you've got two teams so different. We're not going to go through everything, as I said, Floyd, but what of the action early on stood out to you?
Okay, so the first 10 minutes, I'm just breaking it up into segments. So I was told it's 110 degrees in the ring. So you see Matt sweating profusely. The double here, Karana into fist. This was a callback to a Rock and Roll Express versus Tully and Arn match from the 80s. The double hurricanrana, then the punching in the face, and then they get out the ring.
So Rock and Roll versus Brainbusters is very much the two teams that these two teams would most be identified with.
Absolutely. I just thought in the first 10 months that was literally the spot I wrote about, because when I saw it happen, I immediately went back to like 7-year-old me, where I remember watching that match and watching that exact sequence. So the Bucks are literally in first 10 minutes dominating the Maryland match. They're one step ahead of FTR at every move, and it's pure babyface heel style at the beginning of a match.
Yeah, the rhythm of the match reveals itself really early with, you know, FTR working over Matt, focusing on the knee that they pilmanized in the build-up, which I forgot to mention amongst the other things going on, you know, really working over that knee, trying to keep Nick out of the match as much as possible and just doing everything they can to do it. Just classic FTR stuff, I think. There's one moment, you know, where Matt's just in a ton of pain. Dax is just so ruthlessly working over the knee. Matt, you know, finally pulls himself to the edge. And just as they're about to get the tag, Cash just like sweeps Nick off the apron, times it perfectly. It's exactly what initially made the Revival stand out and pop, those sorts of spots in WWE. And they just hit it perfectly here.
Absolutely. And it's just, you know, the crispness of all the moves, how everything means something and this is leading to the next thing. Dax like hits his hand into a post.
Yep.
And bust his hand open and has to get wrapped by Doc Samson. The asymmetry of that is Matt's ankle is broke. And what is the Young Bucks known for? They're known for super kicking. Mm. And now in Dax's hand is busted. What is their catchphrase? No flips, just fist. Everything about the tag teams is being told through the story through this match.
Yep, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. These two teams, they're just absolute wrestling nerds. All four of them. They, you know, like the way FTR are obviously a tribute to the past. The Young Bucks play it a bit differently. They sort of parody the past a little bit and send it up with their act. But you just know from the way these guys wrestle and the way these guys always do those sorts of callbacks and even the way they mock it and parody it, that they are absolute nerds who have watched hours and hours of tape and put hours and hours of thought into everything they do. And that's, you know, what you just mentioned there is the perfect summation of it. I hadn't even put that two and two together on there.
You know, I've watched this match a few times as we discussed before we started recording. Yeah. I mean, but you have your dad build you a ring in the backyard, and they said in their book they couldn't afford to send us to college. They made us a ring. That was their education. So they studying and watching what they see on TV and then recreating it in a ring. It's just the self-built nature of it. I just think these teams parallel each other so much in their passion for wrestling in general, let alone tag team wrestling.
Yeah. Now, midway through the match, just to sort of build on that idea of these guys just being complete nerds, they pulled off a number of really cool tributes to some of their influences, with FTR first hitting the heart attack and then the Steiner drop, and then the Bucks hitting a 3D and then a Swanton Twist of Fate combo.
There was actually one more. Dax superplexed Matt, and then superplexed Matt, and then Cash went for a splash. That was an ode to another tag team that is not really brought up a lot, Power and Glory, that was called Powerplex. That was Hercules.
They do that, they do that move a fair bit, though, don't they?
Yes, so it's always an honor to them.
Yeah, FTR's finisher is an honor to the Brainbusters as well.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm just saying they hit that move, but yeah, it was just a whole bunch of, hey, here's a nod to the past.
Yeah, and huge pops for them as well. Like the crowd went mental when they, particularly I think the ones they recognized most, I think, were the Heart Attack, because I mean,
yes,
it's the Hearts. That's my favorite one of them. I'm a big Bret Hart fan. So the minute I saw the Heart Attack, I was just like, yes, yes. And from those guys who are always praising Bret Hart. And then, of course, everyone noted the Swanton and Twist of Fate, because the Bucks and the Hardys, it's just such an obvious lineage there.
Yep, the lineage of the blonde hair brunette tag teams. It started with Rock and Roll Express, Hardys, and now the Young Bucks.
Yeah, and you were mentioning before how they were sort of working one another over, with, of course, Dax having his hand hurt and Matt Jackson getting his knee or ankle, it was his ankle, pulmonized before and continually worked over. I really, really just loved the way that they built the match around that, particularly with Matt trying to get the hot tag, and when it finally hit, of course. Man, how good is Nick Jackson on a hot tag? Like, I think there was one where, you know, he hit strikes, kicks, he went out to the outside, did a backflip, hit a double bull, like a bulldog clothesline combination. The crowd's just going absolutely nuts the whole time. And then, of course, we also had the DIY finisher that Dax and Cash hit, tribute to DIY, the team that they did a lot of work with in the...
Yes.
The WWE, and obviously they wanted to send out a signal to those guys. By the way, as a sidebar, wouldn't it be great if those two ended up somewhere in AEW as a tag team? That would be a fantastic addition. Fantastic addition if that could happen.
That was the move I popped the most for, was the DIY one, because that was my favorite of the FTR rivalries.
Yeah. One of the bits that I liked the most, the sort of the segments that I really enjoyed, was when the Bucks put FTR in stereo sharpshooters. So they had one on the outside, one on the inside, respectively, putting them in sharpshooters. FTR try to grab their hands, but the Bucks pull them away, and then Matt's leg gives out. And just, I don't know, the way that they managed to do that. And then Nick is on the outside. He's sort of frustrated. He signals for a tag, but Matt can't even get there. And they, you know, eventually managed to get it and hit this big near fall with a BTE trigger, which Cash saves. But you've got just this continual back and forth of the Nick managing to get some momentum for his team, Matt letting it down a little bit, Dax and Cash doing everything to cut each other off. What did you think sort of nearing the end of the match? Who did you think would win this?
So I came in fully expecting the Young Bucks to win. But when it came down to, well, the match is getting, you know, kind of hot and heavy, and they're hitting the moves and they're about to hit the spike pile driver, is when I let it kind of climb into my heart that FTR was going to win the match. It was just so brilliantly done, because literally until the last moment when the match was decided, they made you think both teams were going to win. So many false finishes. The BTE trigger, you know, I love it because it was a nod to, you know, like, I know they repurposed it, as I said. They didn't steal it. They repurposed it from Kota Ibushi and Kenny Omega. So it's just the team that they had another great match with. Mm. So when we're getting to the end, I'm like, I don't know who's going to win this. And I'm actually in my seat. And I stand up because I felt like the finish was coming. I felt like we were winding down, and I stood up because I just wanted to see who was winning, because, you know, I'm wearing my FTR shirt and I'm like looking at the match, and I'm just like on the edge of my seat. Like, I can't believe this, that I'm watching this. I can't believe where is this going to go? But I just felt like it was perfectly built toward the end.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. The match sort of really hits a pinnacle and a crescendo when they both hit their finishes, but managed to get, so first Cash dives in to save from the BTE trigger. After that, there's a bit more back and forth, and then FTR get them up for a mind breaker on Matt, but Matt gets his foot on the ropes to just make the save. And then I love this bit where Cash rips Matt's boot off. And Dax puts it in inverted figure four. It just looks so brutal. And Matt's selling is just impeccable at this moment. And then Cash just launches himself over the ropes onto the outside. It's the most ugly but effective looking sort of dive you've seen, just to sort of stop Nick from getting being able to get in and make the save while Dax has got Matt in the figure four, inverted figure four. And then Cash goes for this 450 splash, which Matt dodges, hits a super kick with his exposed foot, literally falls on top of Cash because he can't stand anymore because of his foot that's been worked on the whole match. And then he manages to hit the super kick, but it kills him. He literally falls on top of Cash to get the three count, get the win. You know, they could have gone with one of their finishes for the ending, but instead they did this, and it was a surprise ending. It was a brilliant ending. I think it caught lots of people off guard, but also had some sort of narrative and story to it as well.
Yes. A big thing in the 80s and old school matches, very rarely did a title change hand with someone's finisher. It just didn't. It was always some kind of roll up. Ric Flair was like the roll up king. He was either getting rolled up or rolling someone up for the pin, a knee to the chest, some kind of quick pin that the person just gets shocked. So we get this Cash, you know, he doesn't have Tully there to keep him focused. So he gets excited. He's like, these dudes aren't staying down. I have to do something dramatic. So Cash makes the first huge mistake of the match. He goes for the springboard 450. He goes up in there. No flips, no fists. That's their whole gimmick. And he does a flip. And of course, not being comfortable up on the top ropes, he misses. And what does Matt do? The ankle that they have been working on and they've been damaging and they have tried to take out, he uses the damaged ankle to kick Cash Wheeler in the face and get the 1, 2, 3. Poetic justice, babyface vengeance. Not only did you not take my ankle away, not only did you not take my weapon away, I then used that weapon to be the final death nail and get the 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I've heard some people not love the way that the selling is there, where he's using his injured foot to hit a move, because some people would say you can't use your injured, if something's injured, you shouldn't be using it because it's injured. But the way that he hits it and the way that he sells it is that he's feeling every bit of it, but he's just gritting through it because he's a baby face and he's got heart and he's got fire and he's got a will to win. And even though he knows it's going to hurt him and he's probably going to be in crutches for a week, he's going to hit the super kick because he knows that that's how he can win the match. And yeah, brilliant piece of babyface fire and grit and heart. And as you said, narrative justice as well for everything they put him through in the lead up. You know,
I feel like anyone that had a problem with the ending as far as the selling wasn't paying attention, because he literally knows the ankle.
He sells the entire match.
He holds the ankles hurt. He kicks him. Yep. And literally as he's pinning him, he's reaching for his ankle.
Yeah, he's not holding the legs up. He's holding his leg. Yep.
Yes, he's holding his leg because he's in that much pain. And I'm not going to say I'm a fight expert, but you're in a fight and something's hurt and that's all you have to use. You're going to use whatever is available. And the super kick.
That's his instinct, right? Is to hit a super kick.
Yeah, yes.
And that's him staying true to himself. Whereas, what did FTR do that was their mistake? They didn't stay true to themselves, even though they had the match theoretically won with, both of the Bucks out and Matt extremely injured.
Yes. And it was like Cash hits the big move. Why didn't you go for the pin? He wanted to beat Young Bucks with their own style, their own thing.
Yep.
That was his fatal mistake. And it's just, it's brilliant because what usually gets rid of heels is that their ego, their idea, I need to not just beat you, embarrass you. If you're an AEW fan and you just watched the Miro versus Sami match, yeah, you know, it was Miro losing it in the middle of the match and taking the turnbuckles out, and it ended up working against him. It is just brilliant storytelling.
The hubris. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for.
Yeah, and so things finish up. Bucks celebrating while they sell their injuries. Omega comes out to help them to the back. This was, yeah, as you said, hot and heavy in the air, sweat dripping off all the competitors, guys just going out there and giving their all. This went for over 30 minutes, I believe. I've got one question, and this is a big one. There was perhaps no match that could match the hype that this one had. Perhaps if Okada reverse Omega number 5 happened, or perhaps if maybe Omega versus Kota Ibushi happened again, you could say that that had a longer build. This one was in the air, in people's minds for 4 years. Did it live up to the hype, Floyd?
For me, it did. It was everything that I wanted it to be. And if you, I thought it was a perfect match. Nothing, you know, no conditions, no anything. I thought it was a perfect match. But when you think about the 110 degree heat, the exhaustion that they went through and had to fight through, to the point where they literally had passed out and had to be put on IVs and given water when they got to backstage, the no crowd. So, I mean, you have a very small crowd. So the reactions, you know, as far as we were, they probably didn't hear them, you know, because it was like, it was the ring. There was the AEW people in the crowd. Then there was a huge section of empty seats. And then way in the back, up in the hundreds, you finally had some people. So even if you're thinking about sound traveling, they probably didn't hear a lot of reaction.
Yeah, it's an open amphitheater as well.
Yeah, they can't feed off the crowd. So they're just wrestling. And that's what I was saying before. If you're going to compare this tag team to any other match, compare it to a match that's in the same situation. And when you compare it to a match in the same situation, there's no match even close.
Yeah, I tend to agree, particularly, you know, when it comes to tag team matches. I can't think of too many that were better than this during the pandemic era. Of course, you've got, you know, brilliant matches like the Young Bucks Lucha Bros series that we've had before AEW Dynamite kicked off. You know, some of the ones that Kenny and Hangman did early on against the Lucha Bros, against SCU on the boat. Of course, there's the Revolution tag match, which one day we will get into on this podcast for sure. But when you're looking at matches that happened in the vacuum of the pandemic with, you know, with the AEW crew making a lot of noise and doing as much as they can, and props to those guys who were out there week in, week out. This is the first match we've actually done that was during that pandemic era. So it probably deserves to be mentioned, like, props to those extras that were out there every single night, every single week, making noise, creating as much atmosphere as they possibly could.
Because it was just as hot for them, you know, yeah, they're right down there in it. So it's just as hot for them, and they managed to stay energetic. I always say my crowd MVP goes to Austin Gunn. I just, like, dude, I thought he was just pounding. He had to be pounding bangs somewhere, yeah, or monsters or something, because
One day he's going to have a shoulder issue, and it's going to be because he was banging the fence so much.
Yes.
I think the only other match you could compare, the in terms of tag team matches, compare from during that era would be the street fight between the Best Friends and Proud and Powerful, and that's a a totally different atmosphere, doing a totally different sort of thing for a lot shorter period. You know, it's almost apples and oranges. It's hard to compare the two to if you're going to say which one's better, because they are so very different.
Yeah, it's just, and like I said, I don't want to take anything away from any other tag team matches, because I don't feel like you got to bring another match down to build one up. They're great. They're all great. I just think this was particularly in a weird situation. It's just because when the Young Bucks and, you know, FTR gets released, I literally thought the pandemic was going to last a few months, and I thought we were going to be seeing it in front of 10,000 people, 11,000 people, and, you know, half the crowd, well, 75% of the crowd would be for the Young Bucks, 25% of the crowd would be for FTR, because, of course, they're heels. So, you know, and, you know, people would be wearing it, and it would just be this excitement and energy. And I do think we'll get that match eventually. I've learned to be patient with AEW because they deliver, so I do think we'll get that match eventually. But they did it in front of no one, and they still killed it. 5.25 is just like, I don't think you'll find a pandemic match rated higher than that. Maybe on the same level, but I don't think you'll find one rated higher than that, especially in America. So I think it stands on its own as a beautiful story told, a beautiful match. And like I said, for a person that had been hoping for that match, it was everything that I wanted.
Yeah, I'll be honest. When I first watched this match, I didn't think that it lived up to the hype. But the more I've gone back and thought about it and looked at it, this was the third time I'd watched this match through. It's one that really does reward repeat viewings, which to me speaks highly for a match. There's some matches where the first time you see it, you think it's incredible, and then you go back and watch it and you're a bit, maybe not. But I think the mark of a truly, truly great match is that when you watch it, you go back and you see things in it that you didn't notice before, and it builds and builds, and its legacy is improved on rewatch rather than harmed. And this match for me definitely was improved on the second time I watched it and third time I watched it. And talking to you about it today, I've learned even more about it that, you know, just adds to my thoughts of this match. So my impression and my respect for this match has only increased as it has faded in time. My respect for it has only increased. I did have to ask one further question, Floyd, because I think this is the podcast to do it. The FTR come out with the greatest tag team of all time banner displayed on their trunks, on their bomber jackets. The Bucks, of course, are probably the critics' choice for it. Who do you think is the best tag team of this generation and why?
Okay, so this is a tough question because my favorite tag team, of course, is FTR. And I do think, and before I say my answer, I want to say I do think what's lost is a lot of people, like, they're not the exciting team in their matches. You know, you got American Alpha, DIY, and them. But for those exciting teams to look good, you need a heel. You need a base to base it against. And I think FTR is the perfect heel tag team. And they make their other play people look good, which that's what wrestling is. That's what the heel does. But you got to look at longevity. Greatness is against different opponents, wrestling different styles. Yeah, I don't think you can touch the Young Bucks. I mean, just being honest, street fights, ladder matches, regular tag team matches, against brawling tag teams, against other high-flying tag teams, against FTR technical tag team. They have just succeeded and been great on so many different levels. I don't think, like, because I'm just trying to be impartial here, I don't think you can have an impartial opinion and them not be one.
Yeah, I agree. Year in, year out, for this generation at least, it sounds like you're better placed to say who the greatest of all time is, because you've got much more of appreciation for the history, but I haven't delved enough into the history of tag team wrestling, particularly the 80s, to really be able to say all time. But certainly this generation, like year in, year out, the Young Bucks are just constantly doing great matches. And, you know, the Revival had an incredible year in 2016, start of 2017. But then 2018, 2019, what's there really to show for it? I don't know.
No fault of their own, but there was nothing there.
It is no fault of their own, but at the end of the day, you have to go with, if you're talking greatest of all time, you have to go with what's there. And the same I'd say for the Usos and the New Day, who were probably the two other teams that enter the conversation the most, rightfully so as well. You know, they had a fantastic series in 2017, absolute all-timer of a series. But then in 2018, you know, you didn't hear much from either of the teams. And it seems to be that a lot of the other teams have had good years and bad years, whereas the Young Bucks' bad year is as good as most of the other teams' good years, and, you know, on their best, completely.
And it's like, have the Bucks really had a bad year? It's just like,
I don't know, since I started following them
in, you know, mid to late 2016, they haven't had a bad year. Shit, they haven't had a bad match. I mean, they've had matches I can say is not as good as others, but man, I mean, they're phenomenal. I mean, like I said, I have a particular style that I love. I am more of an 80s based style tag team wrestling guy. So FTR is always going to be my love. And I think they're in any conversation for the greatest tag team of our generation. They're definitely in the top five, but I truly believe there is a one, which is the Young Bucks, like a Grand Canyon, and then a two.
But you know what? FTR are in the right place to enhance their legacy and really build their legacy. They've been doing fantastic things against Proud and Powerful. I really liked that series of matches they had, even though the first one was, you know, a bit snake bit. But their second match I thought was fantastic. They've done some great things with Jurassic Express. As I said, their series when they were champions, where they did a brush with greatness, it was week after week. You know, there wasn't matches on this level, but you can't do that week after week when you've only got 20 minutes. But they were doing great little tag team, television tag team matches every single week in, week out. And
yeah, you know, they had a match with Jurassic Express that I thought was really good.
Yeah,
in a greatness series.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just a team that fits their style so well, because you've got Jungle Boy, who's the guy they can get so much heat on, and then Luchasaurus, who's this massive hot tag and force of nature that they're just going to try and keep out of the match. I do remember that one being good as well. And as you said, these two are going to fight again sometime. I don't know when, but it's going to happen. And I'm sure once more we will rejoice.
We will rejoice, and it's going to be in. I will always say this, not trying to make this anything. Please get vaccinated if you're not, because I want it to be in front of a full crowd, and I want it to be everybody exciting, hopefully without masks, because everybody's vaccinated and this thing is gone, and everybody, I can be in my full FTR gear, sweating and exciting and pretty much standing up and annoying the hell out of the person sitting behind me, because that's what I'm waiting on. But man,
you won't be annoying them, Floyd, because they'll be on their feet as well.
Yes, but the FTR, the last Pride and Powerful match, I was in second row for, and I was like, this is the match, because the first match in Charlotte, I was so depressed because they didn't announce Charlotte until like literally like a week before they were going there, and I was like, I can't go.
Can't sweat.
But yeah, so I just couldn't make it. So I got to make it in Chicago, and it was just such a great match. And this will tell you the pureness of my wrestling fandom. I love FTR. I really don't care if they ever win another match, because that's how good they are. They are sometimes better in matches that they lose and in matches that they win. Like, literally all my favorite FTR matches, they lost.
Well, I'm just thinking now what my favorite FTR matches, you know, American Alpha, they lost. DIY, the two out of three falls, they lost. This match, yeah, they lost.
Yeah, well, it's like they're a brilliant tag team whether they win or lose.
I mean, isn't that the sign of a great heel tag team, that when they lose, it's brilliant, like, and you just can't get enough of it?
Yes, and it was like, I watched the match with Kenny and Hangman, and I thought it was a really, really good match. I probably rated it higher than other people rated it from how I watched it, but I think a lot of rating got killed is because FTR won. It's like, they played the heels, they played the assholes, and you know what? Hangman and Kenny didn't get their revenge. And that's kind of hard to swallow when you're watching wrestling. You're always expecting the comeuppance. And no, there was no comeuppance. FTR won. They are the new tag team champions. That kind of sucks, you know? So I just think their matches, when they've been dicks to people for like a long time and they finally get theirs in the end, is just a perfect way to tell a story.
Yep. Couldn't agree more there. Look, Floyd, we're fast approaching an hour, which is sort of the limit I've added onto these. We're doing 1 hour broadways here at the AEW Match Guide podcast. Did you have anything extra to add about the match before we sign off here?
Let me go. I think I covered everything. I covered everything. I really did. I went through all of my notes.
Yeah, well, look, thank you so much for being here. As I said, I really enjoyed going back and watching this match again, and it only increased my appreciation for it. It's one that deserves a rewatch if you can, as so many of these matches do. I've done a few of these recordings. Every single time I think I've said that. So, you know, we're talking about the best matches ever that AEW have done. So it's bound to happen. But definitely go back and rewatch it if you haven't. Floyd, tell the good people where they can find you.
You can find me on my personal Twitter at Floyd Johnson Jr. Just my name, at Floyd Johnson Jr. The profile says hashtag FTR Express. So, you know, that should tell you who I am. And it's a picture with me of FTR. The other one is at AT Elite Pod. All Things Elite was already taken by a show that wasn't doing a podcast called All Things Elite. That's really weird. But at AT Elite Pod is the All Things Elite. Our show usually drops Tuesday morning, so definitely take a listen to that. Me and Austin break down all the shows and try to get you caught up with everything in the AEW world.
Yeah, great brand symmetry there. you've got the current events, I've got the legacy. Fantastic.
Yes, when you asked me about this match, I was like, you're like, I don't want to be stepping on your toes. I'm like, no, hell yeah, do it. Do it. This is amazing. Man. I'm like, it's only 2 years. And the fact that you have this many great matches to talk about is impressive.
Mate, and that they're just adding on it every single week. I think about, oh, where's this match going to be ranked where we do this next year? So, yeah, I can't wait.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a pleasure being on. I thank you for asking me. I really appreciate it. Anytime you need someone to come on and riff about wrestling, I will gladly do it.
Yeah, mate. Love your work. Thank you so much. And thank you to the good people out there for listening. You can find me on Twitter, Sir_Samuel. And as I said at the start, if you did enjoy the podcast today, please subscribe to it or like it on whichever podcast app you use. And tell a friend. Why not? Tell someone that likes AEW to come listen to the AEW Match Guide podcast. I'd really love it if you could. But until next week, thank you so much for listening. Bye. Thanks for listening to the AEW Match Guide podcast. If you enjoyed the show, then you can subscribe on the podcast app of your choice so you never miss an episode. Also, feel free to let me know on Twitter at Sir_Samuel. I'd love to hear from you. The AEW Match Guide podcast is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network, where you can find many other fantastic podcasts discussing not just AEW, but all parts of the world of professional wrestling. Looking forward to seeing you again next week. I'm Sam Brown.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.